Johan asked me to present what we are doing in Lamita. This is not exactly what I will speak about, but more generally, issues that raise in resource and ecosystem management with including sustainability objectives. This is about the main point I plan to follow in my presentation. And it was a joke for Mr. Prefet, but he's not yet here. The economics, and especially resource economics, is dedicated to an old economic issue, which is the scarcity issue. And this morning we hear new things from Michel Serre about what is scarcity. And economics was once called the dismal science because the scarcity implies that you are making choices. And making choices usually meaning that you will choose what will be lost, what you will renounce to in order to get what can be got. How do we know that something is scarce? If you have a market, if you have property rights, price will be rising. It's easy. That's what economics do in the mainstream. In many cases, you have no market, no property rights, and then no prices. In that case, scarcity will be noticed because of social or political warning. Something happened, and you know about things what happened. And sometimes, scarcity will be known too late. I mean, you will know that something was scarce once you have lost it. And there is nothing you can do to go back to what you have before. But Michel Serre this morning said that it will just mean that we will change the system and possibly continue in a new way. There is a rather known debate about what is the so-called environmentalist paradox. What is the environmentalist paradox? Is the case, namely put on the scene with the Millennium Ecosystem Assessment, that unless ecosystems and ecosystem services are degrading, human welfare looks like it's improving. It's better off each year. Amazing. And the question is that trend going to continue, or are we at the end of the way? There are papers on this subject, and several hypotheses have been studied. Maybe we are unable to measure appropriately welfare. Then the welfare is declining, but we don't know it yet. Well, not so sure. Maybe among the ecosystem services, food production is much more important than any other. And as long as we are eating, things may be improving because we will find our well-being, our welfare through other things than that ecosystem services. And till now, food production has improved, and then we don't notice well-being decline. Other possibility is a time lag hypothesis. I mean, the causes of the well-being decline are here, but not yet the effect. But they are coming. Don't disappear. Don't be depressed. And finally, the more hopeful hypothesis, technology will allow us to substitute, to find new ways to do what we were doing with ecosystems in the past. And the question is there physical limits to substitution? Once we have no more resources, once we have broken all ecosystems, are we able to live in a perfectly artificial system just from energy from the sun and all the remaining will be produced by human activities? Not very sure. How do we manage what's called common pool resources? Common pool resources is resources that are not perfectly privately appropriated and everybody can take his part without a special right. And there is a classical differentiation between private, public rights, common good, and club goods. And private pool, common pool resources are usually considered as common. We know, especially from the works from Elinor Ostrom, that there are various property regimes that allow to manage common pool resources. And what we know from recent papers is that any kind of formal property right will generate new externalities. Maybe a word back to say that the economic theory of property rights suggests that property rights emerges when there are costly externalities. Externalities is economic effects that are not regulated. There are externalities, then you created new property rights in order to manage them. But when you create property rights, you have external effects, you have side effects, you have effects on what is not concerned with the right. Take an example, maybe, about the payment for ecosystem services. Of course, if you believe that ecosystem services have value and you want to manage them through a payment system, you will have side effects on people that are not able to receive payments, or on people that will appropriate or destroy more rapidly ecosystems in order to get the payment. Many unexpected effects that will, that will have inefficiency effects. There are many ways to improve the management of natural resources. Some are studied at the LAMETA. This will be one of my insights about my research center. And of course, you can create new rights, new allocation mechanisms, trading mechanisms to allow the resources to be allowed or allocated to the most efficient use, the classical economic thinking. But you can, on the other way, have an agency that will centralize the management of the resources, and then you will create incentive mechanisms to the final users, typically pricing. And when you want to price resources, especially water, which is an issue in many, many countries and regions in the world, by now, most of the water is free, it's not paid. When it is paid, it's linear pricing. Linear pricing means that if you take X cubic meters, you will pay X times the price of one cubic meter. You have many solutions to price in different ways. I can't explain, but it may be much too long. But you can have a binomial pricing. I mean, a part to be connected to the network, another part proportional to the consumption. And a more interesting thing is a double pricing. You first pay for reserving a quantity of water, and then you pay if you happen to use this water. Then you pay in two time, and it's a good way to allocate water to people that have not the possibility of substituting the use of water by anything else. Of course, when managing resources and ecosystem, we have to deal with strong issues related to time, uncertainty, and irreversibility. 3 points. Is sustainability just an improvement of the old efficiency, economic efficiency concepts? The economic efficiency concept means that resources, all kinds of resources, will be allocated through market and price mechanisms to the places, to the users that have that can take a better value, the larger value from these resources. And for example, if you have a market for water, like it exists in Western America, in India, in Australia, Pakistan, then you have a mechanism that if you create a little value with water, somebody else, another, especially in California, it's between agriculture and cities. And cities are buying the water from agriculture because they're willing to pay higher price for water. And it may be an issue because, of course, in cities, there are people that are much richer than little peasant in the countryside, and then they are okay to pay water at a higher price, and then the agriculture is cut off. There is no more production at all in these regions. Another last point, to study the compatibility between sustainability and efficiency, the first point is to know how to define sustainability. And friends, colleagues that are working on this subject, according to the way they define sustainability, there is a huge amount of definitions of sustainability in the economic literature. Then excuse me, then you have different results. And sometimes it's perfectly compatible, and sometimes it's perfectly incompatible, which is, of course, a great issue. On the more classical way, it's a way of according the old practice of discounting. Discounting is the fact that values that will occur in the future will be less valued in the present decision, according to the concept of equity, especially international equity, that genuinely and naively can lead to the idea of you don't have to discount, any generation has the same right to resources and things like that. In fact, it's not efficient. A better way is to have a lower discounting rate that will allow to take in account in the same time efficiency in the present and a better interest for the interest of future generations. But, well, it's all a debate. I'm not able to present properly now. An old economic myth is the existence of an environmental Kuznets curve. Kuznets is a Nobel Prize in economics that show in the 60s or even 50s that during the development process, there is an inverse U curve between the level of GDP per capita and the inequality in the society. Poor society are rather equal, developing society are very unequal, and later, when the welfare state works, equality comes back to society. I'm not very sure that even on that point, it's still right now. It was written in 1957. I don't know people waiting on, especially on this point by now, but probably the inverse U curve has become a positive U curve. But what about the relation between GDP and environment? The myth was that poor countries do not destroy environment, developing countries destroy heavily environment, and rich countries have strong environmental policies that will protect the environment. Is there strong empirical evidence that it works? The answer is not. Unfortunately, in most cases, whatever the variable from environmental situation, especially for deforestation, quality of air, or things like that, it's not working very well. Of course, it will be a very enthusiasming result if it could work, but it's not very probable. There is another interesting issue, which is named the resource curse, la malédiction des ressources. The fact that countries that are more richly endowed with natural resources than others have less economic development than the others. And if you think about countries you know, you will see that intuitively it works. But when you try to build a theoretical model of why is it like it, it works not so well. You have two main ways to study. You have strict economic models that try to understand why investment will be, there is an over investment in the resources and then an under development in education, infrastructures and things like that. And then after a few years of apparent wealth, then the development fade out. And it doesn't work very well. A better system is political economy model. And what is shown is that in a country which is rich, you see, which is richly endowed, excuse me, in natural resources, the political system, the constitution, how it works, will be maybe more corrupted because it's easier to have money without organizing economic production. And then you go to a period where it's the economic development will be stopped. But, well, there is quite an amount of work on that, including in my unit. Last main point, what about valuing ecosystems and ecosystem services? Maybe the first point is to understand what is the meaning of economic value. I will not present all that point, but just to make you understand that valuing economically doesn't mean giving an absolute value in the sense the value of ethics or things more fundamental about how a society works. Economic value is just the way you give value to things, to choice options, in order to make arbitrage, to make trade-off. What is the best solution by now when you have to make a choice? Then, when you value ecosystem services, it is in no way an appropriate way to give value to nature. Economic value to nature has no particular meaning. But it's a way to inform decision-making involving impacts on ecosystems. And it has this kind of properties. Of course, if you consider all the consideration of the value of ecosystems, you will meet conflicts. And my joke, if you can say it, people that are invited for dinner and they don't have time to pick up a wine bottle and they give the money to their friends. Oh, I don't know if you have ever tried that, but I probably not very appropriated. And it is exactly the mistake that people who believe that valuing economically ecosystems is a way to compensate the real value of all the things that could be drawn, that can be supported by ecosystems would be concerned. It is not at all this issue. So of course, there are incommensurability among the values that allow a society to work, to function, but it's not a reason to refuse to value ecosystem services in order to make local, practical decisions. For making the decision, most of you have probably met the Millennium Ecosystem Assessment System. It's a little improvement that has been given by two English researchers that shows that from the physical structure of ecosystems, you can go to economic value in quite a series of steps. And at the end, you have this funny system with arrows in every sense, in every colors, in every size. And you said, what is important there? This is important. What is important is that if you don't prepare the opportunity to have choice, you have no choice. And whatever happens, you will support it, whatever it costs to you. Then the important point in this funny scheme is that we have to preserve, to develop, to prepare the liberty of choice in the future. And this liberty has many dimensions. At the end, if you have followed the idea of valuing, you have all this stuff, the enlargement of the concept, the economic concept of value, that from the traditional direct use value has been enlarged to new reason, new economic reason for protecting nature. There is a very good paper in Nature, I think, about that in 2006, Matt Coley and others. But following what we have told, there are other values that are not in the scope of economic value that could be important for society. And if you are in a situation of making political decision, you have to know that the green value, of course I put it in green, that will be taken into account in another way. It's not an economic, you can't traduce them in the economic framework, but it exists. If you want to value biodiversity and ecosystem service, you have to model. You have to make scenario of what will be the business as usual way of what will happen and what will be the solution of some decision, some policy, something you want to value. The economic valuation is always related to choices, to action, to policy, not to nature, to things, to objects. The valuation is related to alternatives of choice. And at the end, and it won't be long now, you have this kind of results, and these results show that, you know, the abscess line is from natural systems to urbanized system. Oh, from natural to urban. And if you consider the value of system, you have a global envelope, but you know that Millennium Assessment distinguish among ecosystem services, provisioning, regulating, and cultural, which is the remaining things. And of course, provisioning services are compatible with intensively modified ecosystems. but I'm sure you have already heard about this funny invention, which is agriculture. And of course, an ecosystem which is oriented to producing useful resources is more productive in these special resources than if you let it wild and making its life for himself. Then, provisioning services are compatible with intensively modified ecosystems instead of cultural regulating and spiritual cultural services, which are more present in a more natural, a less anthropized, I don't know if this word exists in English, ecosystem. And this is why at the first step about the environmentalist paradox, the idea that maybe the food production is dominating every service is the importance of human well-being. There are many issues and controversies that accompany this works. Only a few words on the fact that valuing diversity, ecosystem doesn't mean that you have to make them market goods. The idea of valuing ecosystem on the large scale, you have probably heard about this very famous paper of Costanza et al. In 1997, which was the value of the world ecosystem services and natural capital. Of course, it was just a provocation. It's not at all a meaningful result, because the value of nature has no economic meaning, possibly in other systems, but not in economics. But if you are related to a context, a decision context, a policy context, then you can make meaningful valuation. We just have to be careful about one point. If you make a valuation contextual, I mean somewhere in the Rhone Valley, you will value the opportunity to manage a new industrial area against ecosystem services. If you just value locally, I can introduce that only the offer side, the supply side of the ecosystem, probably the result will be that, okay, destroys at all. The industrial area will be much more valuable for society. But if you consider the demand side is that the human point of view, the human welfare point of view, and the fact that maybe these ecosystems that will be destroyed at the last of their category, of their kind, of their nature. It is not only, a forest again, a repulsive, is it appropriate? local repulsive, it's the last repulsive of this category in the world. In that case, and it's typically a demand side point of view, it's a point of view of users. From the point of view of what happens, it happened exactly of what was happening if there were thousands of square kilometers of this kind of ecosystems. But it is the last. And in that case, the value is much higher. And this is why when you value locally, you have to think globally of the place, of the system, of how it works in the ecology, in the population ecology, in the natural world. As long as you are far from collapse, from shock, don't be. It's not unexpected that the value will be low. The value will be high only if you are near the crisis, near the point where things will become catastrophic. And it's often very complicated to identify this point. And this is the main point in this works of local evaluation. Last point, last joke, how to communicate the results, how to make the bridge between understanding, knowledge, and policy decision making. I let you some time to read all, it's better that you read because my English is so poor, sorry. It isn't it exactly what happens in the climate conferences? In biodiversity, it's coming, don't be afraid. And then my last point, it's finished, will be, well, there are many issues raised by the expertise work, but first point, science never tells us what we have to do. Ethics, policy process, make decision. Science is just information that we have to make in the process. And our responsibility is at this level, not to believe that we are king philosopher. Is it the appropriate tradition of philosopher roi? But unfortunately, there is a separation between the philosopher and the king that make the decision. And the issue is how to put the information, how to put the knowledge in a way that the decision makers will understand, will take into account. Then managing or helping to the management to resource and ecosystem implies both a positive approach, understanding what is at stake, what is happening, what are the dynamics, either in the natural system and in the social systems, and to have a positive point of view. What are the values we want to put first? What is important? What is not? And this is a normative point of view, which is produced by ethics, by economics, and which is implemented through the law. And it's very interesting to notice that lawyers today are able to introduce in the right interests that are not human interests. There is a real recent nomenclature of the environmental damages. I'm not quite sure of the translation. And the first point is damages to ecosystems without references to human interest. And in my point of view, I'm not a lawyer, it's quite new that in the nomenclature you have this idea that you can introduce damage to nature independently of any human interest, just because the law said you have to have hydro system at a good quality level. It's an objective by himself. Last point, what is it? Yes, of course, implementing economic or any science analysis of resource and ecosystem management is a political choice. It doesn't exist one century ago. And can you imagine what would happen? I'm more a specialist of biodiversity economics, and there is a normative affirmation, which is no net losses of biodiversity. Can you imagine if this idea had emerged in the idea of August 2,000 years ago? No net loss. We don't want to lose any kind of biodiversity from that point, which is the third century after. Can you imagine around us how would be the world? And probably quite very, very poor, not so agreeable for us. But now, probably, there is a political awareness, a political consciousness that now we are at the point that we should do something. Science can't say that to us. Only, I don't know what, a higher point of view. And it is what is happening by now. This is why we are creating this institute. There is now a consciousness, an awareness that we have to do, we have to act now and not for the future generation. Thank you very much.